Okay, let's pick up in the area of free will. Okay, this is the Rambam's famous answer to the issue of fatalism. The Rambam's are building up a case in Parakeh to explain to us that free will is an ikar of Torah, and that he emphasizes that humanity has an independent ability to make decisions without any external coercive forces. So in a sense, we're in control of what we do. And that's critical because in order to be culpable for an action, right, there must be some ability to choose. So in a very simple way, the idea of schar and onesh could never work if somebody had to be, so to speak, a tzaddik or a rasha. There'd be no, it would make no sense to have such a system of schar v'onesh. Okay? But then the Rambam, and the Rambam again ends halacha dalad by saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this, that this was his desire, so to speak. He wanted to set up the universe in a way where everything physical, so to speak, is set in motion and is programmed to run a certain way. But humanity is different because humanity has this ability to choose. So in some sense, our ability to choose doesn't fit into the rest of how the universe works. But if that were true, that's going to present us a problem insofar as our idea of God's knowledge being complete. So that's what he says in Halacha Hey. He says, Shema Tomar, so maybe what you'll say at this point, V'alo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yodea Kol Ma Shiyeh V'Kodem Shiyeh Yodea. Right? Shezeh Yeh Tzadik HaRasha Olo Yodea. So we know that God, we only have one of two options. Either God has knowledge of the fact you'll be a tzaddik, right? Or not, right? And we're left with two possible options. So in one sense, if we want free will to be something where I actually have, let's say, two roads in front of me, one potential tzaddik and one potential rasha, that both those roads exist to some extent, and until I choose it, right, we don't know which reality would emerge, that would imply that God does not know what I'm going to choose, okay? Or if God knows what I'm going to choose, right, so then were those two roads really in front of me? So like he says, im yodea shehu yeh tzadik, if he knows the person is going to be a tzadik, yefshar shelo yeh tzadik, then it's impossible for him to be anything other than a tzadik. So this notion of choosing good versus evil is false. Vim tomar she yodea she yeh tzadik, v'efshar she yeh rasha, hare lo yodea davar al borov. But if it's true that if he doesn't know whether you'll be a tzaddik or not, then there's something about him or himself, so to speak, that he's, or that which he created, that he's unaware of. So you're stuck. Okay. This is one of the most famous philosophical questions in the idea of free will and God. That if there's a notion of free will would imply that, there are two roads in front of me and there is no, in a sense, my future is being written. Right, and it's in my death. It's my choice. How do I want to write my future? Which means that only I can know, so to speak, which path I'm going to take. But that means God doesn't know. If God does know the path I'm going to take, then I'm always going to have to be a tzaddik, and there was no other path I ever could have taken. So his answer is as follows. He says, "Da shetshuvas she'elazu aruka me'eretz mida or achava mina yam." Right, v'kama ikarim gdolim v'haram ramim tluyim ba. So he says, he starts off by letting us know that this is an incredibly broad, deep, difficult, challenging area that is, and there's fundamental deep ideas that are associated with it. Meaning, in order to understand this, it's not a simple thing to understand. It's a very, very challenging area. But he says, but you still have to know and understand what I'm about to tell you. So even though this entire thing he's about to say is extremely difficult to understand, at the same time, he feels obligated to let you know what the answer is. So what's the answer? Or what's his approach, I should say? He says, Kvar bi'arnu b'perek sheni mehilchos Sedia Torah. We explained earlier on in Sefer Mada, She'akadosh Baruch Hu eno yodea medea shehi chutz nimenu k'bnei adam shehem v'daitam shnayim. So as you recall, so when it comes to a human being, there's the human, right? And then there's knowledge. And knowledge, in a sense, okay, knowledge of something is separate from us. They're two separate things, okay? But when it comes to God, his knowledge and him are one, right? There is no separation of him and his knowledge. Elohu yisal shmo v'daito echad. So God's name, so to speak, and knowledge are one. Now, here's a problem. A person can never understand this idea, okay? So we can't understand the idea of how God's knowledge is one and the same with him. It's an impossibility. So, ukashem she'en koach adam lahasig v'limso amitas abore, right? And so just like man is unable to understand the truth of God, the essence of God, shenemar kol kilo yirani adam v'chai, kach ein koach adam lahasig v'limso daito shabore. So too, we can't understand, right, this knowledge of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so the first thing he basically does is, and I'm not here to judge the quality of his answer, but the first thing he wants to tell us is that it's important to understand that when we talk about God knowing, the idea of God knowing is nothing to do with the idea of man's knowledge. Our idea of knowledge of something, right, which would be external, right, is a completely different idea of knowledge. The very term knowledge itself doesn't do justice to what the idea of God's knowledge is. They're two separate phenomena. So the first thing he says is, there's no way to understand what God's knowledge means in any normative sense, okay? Husha Navi Amar, kilo machshavosai machshavoseichem, velo darchechem darachai. Bekevan shein anu banu koach leida heach yodea kadosh baruch hu kol abruim v'masim, right? And just like we don't have the ability to understand how God's knowledge of that which he's created is complete, aval neida velo safek, shemaisa adam biad adam, right? Vena kadosh baruch hu moshko, velo gozro lasoskach. But what we can know is we can say that without a doubt, we are in control of our actions and God doesn't force us to do anything. Okay? And he says, we know this not just from theology, right? But we also know this from basically arguments. You can make logical arguments to justify this point. And that's why it says, man is judged based on his actions. All right, so he swings back to that point that we're always judged based on what we do. So what ultimately is his answer? Okay, and this is his answer to fatalism. So essentially what he's trying to say, and to some extent, is that when we say God's knowledge is different, remember, in other words, it's true that God knows, so to speak, what I'm going to do, okay? But the idea of what I'm going to do, that terminology itself has no bearing in God's knowledge because God's knowledge is not a chronological knowledge. We look at knowledge in a chronological way when it comes to like decision making. We'll say, I didn't know what I was going to do before. Now I know what I'm going to do or what I plan on doing. Those are all chronological statements. So the knowledge is dependent on time. But God's knowledge, again, it's structured. I don't know if that's the right term, but it's the idea of God's knowledge and him being one. God is removed from that entire, so to speak, realm of information. So it's not that God knows what I would have done or what I'm going to do, or et cetera. It's that God's knowledge is complete. So included in that is everything. So to some extent, yes, there is God's knowledge must include the decision I make. Okay? That's for sure true. But as he emphasizes, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshcho, right? But God isn't forcing you to, meaning the knowledge of what I might do, right? Which again, it's not that God knows it. God doesn't stop and know what I'm going to do because that means there might be a period of time where he didn't know what I was going to do. Rather, it's a complete knowledge. But that doesn't take away in any way from our ability to choose on our own. Meaning there's nothing forcing us. There's nothing compelling us to make a decision one way or the other. So in a sense, he answers the question, so to speak, in a way where, excuse me, he's trying to split the difference by trying to separate God's knowledge from our knowledge. He's trying to create room for the idea of us still being able to have some sense of freedom, of free will, and at the same time not limiting God, okay? And that's the Rambam's attempt to answer the issue of fatalism, to reclassify God's knowledge as a different kind of knowledge. And by doing so, it means that in our realm of existence, it's freedom. But in God's realm of existence, so to speak, there is no idea because that would imply that God doesn't know something, okay? There are obviously, this is an issue that while the Rambam feels like he resolved, there's many, many who question it, and there's other approaches taken, including one approach by Rishon, which is the idea that God knows every decision I could make, but doesn't actually know the specific decision I make, because there's only so many, or there's a list of possible decisions I may make at any point in time. It's not infinite, right? So there could be that God knows all those decisions. He just doesn't know the actual decision I end up making. But again, then you run into the problem of God lacking knowledge, and the Rambam won't tolerate such an idea. Okay? So that's the Rambam's first salvo at free will. Okay? Okay. Parak Vav Halacha Aleph. Now he's going to move more into some more ideas about free will. He says, Psukim Harbe Yish B'Torah Dinervim Shehein Nirin Kisosu Nikrazeh. Okay, so the problem is, just like we saw in Yesodia Torah, and this is consistent with the Rambam's approach, just like in Yesodia Torah, where the Rambam emphasizes the fact that God is not physical, but there's so many verses in Tanakh that challenge, right, the idea of God being not physical, you have the same thing by free will also. There's plenty of psukim that you'll find throughout the Torah, right, throughout Tanakh, that seem to challenge and contradict this notion of man being able to choose. V'nechshalim b'hen rov adam, and this causes many obstacles among people, among most people. V'yalal daitan mehen, Shekhodesh Baruch Hu, who goes ra'al adam, lasos ra'o tova, right? And people come to the conclusion that God, in a sense, decrees for man to do good or bad. Now, what he's hinting at is an offshoot of a theory called occasionalism, which, interesting, is more popular today. Whether that's good or bad is a separate issue, but... And that's the idea that God, like, is actively causing you to do things. Meaning, the famous example is the leaf falling off the tree was caused directly by God. So that's what he's hinting at here. He's talking about how if you read the Torah, you could come to the erroneous conclusion that God is forcing us, God is the direct cause of everything I do. Now, that's a little bit different than what he was saying before. In other words, first he establishes the theory of free will as man independent from God, but then questions if God's knowledge has an impact on that. Here he's saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is actually the direct cause of what he called of our actions. So if you pulled the trigger to fire the gun, it was God in a sense causing you to do that, right? So he says that's impossible. Shein libo sh'adam musul lahatoso l'kol asher yirtzeh, right? And therefore, it's not that man really has true ability and control to do whatever he wants. He says, not to dwell too much on the point, but like people like talking about that when they say like it's all in Hashem's hands or what control do we have? Well, that's perilously close to the idea that in a sense, God's actively causing us to do something. And we have to be very careful with that because it may sound nice in some circumstances. If you take it to its logical conclusion, it means you don't have free will. And the Rambam insists now that's an Ikar Torah, okay? Varyani, just as an example, imagine someone today was arrested for a crime and said, "Listen, but God made me do it. Right? I had no control over it." Obviously, that would not pass any litmus test. Varyani mivar ikur gadol shemenu teida perish kol osam sukkim. So the Rambam says, "Now I'm going to explain to you a fundamental idea that you can use to explain all these verses that seem to contradict the idea of free will." Bizman sha'adam echad o anshe medina chotim. So when one person, or let's say members of a country or nationality, commit sins, and a person does a sin through his own will and his own thinking, right? Like we've explained before, he should be punished. He should be dealt with. And God is the one to know how to deal with that, okay? So the first point he makes is that when it comes to a person sinning, it's important to understand that, again, we understand this idea. It makes sense that the person now is culpable, but insofar as how to determine the level of culpability, we don't know. Ah, but you'll say, don't we have in the Torah like onshim? We do, but God had to tell us what those onshim are. But when it comes to certainly how God will effectuate a change in the world to affect this person, we have no way of knowing, right, on our own, how this works. And he says, Yesh chet shadin no sin shenifrayim menu, Now, we'll get to that, the banav katanim, in a second. But there are certain sins that you do where the judgment will happen to you in this world, maybe with your physical body or your mamam, or with your little kids, or it could happen to your children. Think about that. Because your children are really considered, your little kids are really considered like you. I mean, they're in your rishus, so to speak. You could be punished in this world, and that punishment could be expressed through your money or through something happening to your children. Okay, oksiv ish bechatu yamos achiyase ish. Right, the yeshchet shadin no sin shenifrayim min olam haba. Right, and other chataim, other sins are dealt with in the world to come. Vein the over love shum nezek b'olam hazeh, and he may never suffer at all in this world. V'yish chet shenifraim menu b'olam hazeh v'olam haba. And some chataim are dealt with both here and there. So ultimately, we know that you're deserving of some type of judgment, of some type of outcome by doing a sin. What we don't know is how it's going to emerge, which makes things very tricky, because if something bad does happen to you, does that mean you have the right to say that it was because of a chet? Well, you could say it's possible, but if you said you knew for sure it happened because of a certain chet, then you're implying you know how God's system of schar v'onesh works, and that's a big problem. So thus, going back to today, where a lot of people talk about what's going on in the world today and saying we're being punished for X, Y, and Z, to know, to create that causal relationship would be a problem. It would imply that you understand how God's system of justice works. Okay? Now, Halacha Beis, he says, b'medvar amurin bizman shelo asa tshuva. Okay? This is when a person doesn't do tshuva. Meaning, he did the sin, never did tshuva. Aval imasa tshuva, ha tshuva kitar sifnei ha-puranios. Ukashem sh'adam chota midaito v'tzono, kachu osa tshuva midaito v'tzono. Now, what tshuva does is, tshuva becomes the shield, the protector from any punishment. Okay, so if a person does a chet, he deserves punishment. If he does tshuva, right, so then whatever bad things might have happened to him won't happen to him anymore. Okay, so that is the way of erasing the ledger, so to speak. Okay, and again, he repeats this line again to reinforce this idea that just like through I sin based on my free will, so to tshuva, I do for my free will as well. Okay? Now, Halacha Gimel, he says, now, v'efshar sh'yechda adam chet gadol chataim rabim. So maybe it's possible that an individual or a group of people will do many, many sins. Okay? Or one huge sin. Okay? One sin or many, many sins. Ad sh'yitin adin lifnei dayan emes. Sh'yeha piror mizeh achote al chataim elu. Sh'asa b'tzono b'daito. Sh'monim menu tshuva. Okay. Now there are instances where a person can do something that's so severe, or just do a numerous amount of sins that are so great, right? Where a Kadosh Baruch Hu decides that to remove, this is critical, okay, to remove the ability to do tshuva from you. Okay. Now again, if you're removing the ability to do tshuva, that means you are, in a sense, removing some aspect of free will. Because free will requires, right, the ability for a person, tshuva requires the ability for a person to have free will. So there are instances where HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do this. Now, it's very important to emphasize, some people read it in here on the Yad as saying he removed his free will. It's not that he removed his free will in its entirety. In this area of being able to tshuva, he removed his free will, right? So, you'll see the examples in a second, but it doesn't mean that the faculty in its entirety was suspended. It just means that in this specific area, it didn't exist. Now, of course, that cascades into a lot of other decisions you make, but the point has to be very, very clear. Right, the Hirbu Lipshoa, right? So they did so many sins, right? And they really deserved all this judgment. Until God felt it was necessary to remove the ability to do tshuva, which would cure him. Lefikach, now comes a famous example. Kasa b'Torah, Vani achazekas leparo. Okay? That's what it means, that God's going to harden Paro's heart. Lefi shechet chata me'atzmo tchila. He, through his own free will, chose to sin. V'heira li'Yisrael, right, Hagar b'artso, and he did evil to the Jews living in his land. Shnebar, hava nischak malo. Notice, nischak malo, meaning he used his mind. He used his mind to make a decision to do evil to the Jewish people. Nasan adin limnoa tshuva menu achinifra menu. So God decided, so to speak, to remove tshuva from him, right, until he was, he was punished, and he was taken care of appropriately in this world. So what happens? So it's not that Paro can't make any decisions. It's just that the avenue of tshuva, right, Paro never was able to exercise free will for that. So it's almost as if to say that, and again, why does the Rambam have to say this? Or what's driving the Rambam down this direction? Well, on a simple level, because it says, Vani achazek as lei Paro. But on a deeper level, because when you read the story of the Makos, right, so there has to be something like this going on, because Paro can't be that crazy. I mean, you see after time, when you see over and over again your people being punished in this way, it would be only normal for him to recognize a Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? I mean, there's no matter how evil you want Paro to be, at some point, right, if he has his free will, he's going to choose tshuva, right? But a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't do that. So you can almost imagine, like, I'm not saying it happened this way, but like Paro like wants to be able to tshuva, but that ability is taken away from him, okay? So if that's true, the lama haya shalech lo biad Moshe, v'omer shlach v'asei tshuva, right? But then it seems like a game, because why does Moshe, part of Moshe's shlichus to Paro is to get him to do tshuva, right? Ukvar amra lo kadosh baruch hu, einatam shalech, shenemar v'ata v'vdecha yadati, right? V'ulam bavur zosem maticha, okay? But one second, it seems like a little bit of a trick here, because if God took away his ability to do tshuva, then why is he sending Moshe to engage in these philosophical debates with Paro when ultimately Paro will not be able to do tshuva, right? It's like he's sending Moshe on a mission where there's no chance for him to be able to succeed. Why did he do it? Kidei lehodia lebaya olam, okay, to let the rest of the world know. Shebizman shemoneh akash baruch ho tshuva lechote, eno yachol lashuv, right? Eli yomos berisho sha'asa betchila britzona. He's saying to show the world that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu removes the ability to tshuva from a sinner, he can't do tshuva, right? Rather, he'll die in a state of being a rasha, okay? And so too by Sichon, v'chein Sichon, l'fi havono shehayulo, nischai of the mono min tshuva, right? Shenemar k'hirksha Hashem akachas rucha v'imetzos levavo. So same by Sichon, that Sichon, God took away his ability to tshuva because of the horrible sins that he did. V'chein ha'knanim, right? So too the knanim who lived in Eretz Yisrael. Lefi tov osein, because of their abominable acts that they were immersed in, mana mehena tshuva, asha asa mecham Yisrael. So he's implying, like, it's, why would the Canaanim ever go to war against the Jewish people when they saw the Jews were winning? Because they didn't have the ability to tshuva. Shneemar kimim eis Hashem haisa lechazek es libam, likra asa mecham Yisrael, leman acharimim. V'chein, now here's another one. V'chein Yisrael bimei Eliyo, even the Jewish people, during the times of Eliyo, lefi shehirbu, lefshoa, Manav Osan Hamarbim Livshoa Tshuva. Amazing. So even by Jews, there are instances where God will remove their ability to tshuva. In the times of Eliyahu, when a segment of the population was steeped in Avodah Zarah, God took away their ability to tshuva. The Atas Hibosos Libam Acharonis Kolomar Manas Mehna Tshuva. Okay. Now it's a scary thought, because you see that this rule isn't ironclad. That he said before in Parak Ahay, that God, this is like this property that's unique to man, that God never is Moshe. He never gets involved with it. But there are exceptions, okay? These are the exceptions. Now, if these exceptions exist, that means there could be other exceptions that could exist. So we have to be careful. The possibility always exists that you could be such a heinous sinner that the very ability of tshuva itself gets removed from you, okay? So he says... He says, "Nivsas Omer shelo gazer hakel aparo lahayra Yisrael, v'lo sichon lachto barzo, v'lo laknanem lahasev, v'lo Yisrael lavodakum, ela kulan chatu ma'atzman v'kulan ischay v'lo noam en etshuva." So each of these examples, the people involved exercised their free will to choose to sin, right? But in all those instances, it was obligatory that God remove the ability to tshuva from them. Okay. So this is the famous exception, so to speak, to the Rambam's quote-unquote rule. Okay? Let's do one more halacha. So the Rambam then says, "Uke'inyin zesh in halach dal, ke'inyin zesh sholin ha-tzadikim v'hanavim b'tfilasa meis Hashem la'azram al-emes." And that's what it's talking about when the tzadikim and the nevi'im in their prayers call out to God to help them on the truth. "Kemo sh'amar David harini Hashem d'rachecha, klomar, al yimanuni chati d'erach emes, shemimena eida d'rachecha v'yichud shmecha." So in all these psukim, where they're begging God, right, they're mispal for God, what they're asking God for is they recognize that they sinned. And the fear is a fear that the ability to tshuva will be removed from them. So you do see that a tzaddik, right, should have a fear that if he does a chait, it is possible that the ability to tshuva could be removed from him. And that should, in a sense, produce a certain sense of fear. So the Rambam is saying that that's the attitude a person should have. He should recognize that there's a, what do you call it? Since the ability exists for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take away someone's free will when it comes to tshuva, he should be aware that that exists, and that should also, in a sense, be a reminder when he sins, to always know that tshuva isn't a guarantee. Okay? Now again, how many instances? Well, he references very few, but who knows how many more there could be. So a person should recognize, since that ability exists, the potential for him dying in a state where he never did tshuva is a possibility as well. Okay, we'll stop here and we'll pick this up tomorrow.